Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. SDPB's Kevin Wooster joins us now. You can read his work on our website at sdpb.org/Wooster. But here on Thursdays, he stops by the SDPB studios in the Black Hills, downtown Rapid City, to say hello. Hey, Kevin, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be back. And I got to tell you, to get a beautiful question compliment from Danny Shapiro, that's not too bad.
Thank you very much.
That's a good question.
That's a beautiful question.
That's a good question.
All right, let's talk about some of the stories that you're looking at this week. And one of them is these sort of innuendos about where the governor lives. Tell us how this conversation really kicked off.
One of those reporter things, even old reporters. I'm minding my own business doing something else after the Black Hills Press Club, and I get kind of confronted by this woman who's not happy that reporters, the media, aren't reporting about the fact that Governor Kristi Noem doesn't live in the mansion, lives at the ranch, and that her daughter and son-in-law are full-time residents of the mansion, which this woman thinks is horrible and wrong. And of course, my first question is, well, is that true? And
right.
Of course, that's the jumping off point for this blog piece.
Right. And there's anger in the question.
There is anger in the question. There's without actually knowing whether it's true or not, the woman was very upset by it. And you know, we see a lot of that anger before knowledge, anger before fact, anger before understanding, and sometimes afterwards, too. But so my first, she was unhappy that my first response was, what are you talking about?
Right.
And my second response was, I don't know if that's true or not. But if it is true, is that wrong? And she didn't like that very well because, you know, my question was governor's residence for the governor or family. And even if the daughter and son-in-law were living there, they're part of the family, I guess, especially if it's a short-term arrangement or something. But I did say, as I said in the piece, that skepticism about fact or stories or alleged fact, I should say, or stories is a reporter's stock in trade, and but also should be inquisitive. And so I told her I would call around a little bit and find out if there was any truth to it.
Right. And before we get there, I also want to point out that part of the frustration or the anger that she's expressing is against the media for not covering it. So there
exactly.
usually has a pattern. I'm upset about somebody hiding something. And by the way, why aren't you reporting on it? And therefore, there must be some kind of conspiracy.
Yeah.
And paired with the lack of critical thinking about what the, you know, what the questions that we should ask during, you know, during that conversation even are. So all
sure.
of it comes together, and this is kind of the world that we live in right now.
It is, and you know, and I point out, well, if any of this is true and it hasn't been covered, remember, there's about 10 or 20% of the reporters working in South Dakota that would have been working in South Dakota at a peak. 30%, I don't know what the number is, way down. So everybody's trying to make decisions on what to cover. But I did check around a little bit and found out from sources that I trust. Back-checked it with the governor's office, too, that the Cassidy doesn't live there. She and her husband don't live there. They've got a place of their own.
Cassidy is one of the governor's daughters.
Cassidy's one of the governor's daughters, the older daughter, married daughters. Her husband, Kyle, works for the Office of Economic Development there in Pierre, and they have a place. And Kristi is in the, I mean, it makes sense that Kristi, if you see her in the Capitol every day, she's probably not driving home to Castlewood that night. That during the legislature, for sure, she's there during the week, staying in the mansion or the residence, as you choose to call it, and is home a lot on weekends, which is what she did when she was in Congress. And she's got a son that's a senior, a husband that still lives there. I don't know what they're going to do when Booker graduates, you know, and moves off. Will Brian, her husband, move out to Pierre? I don't know. But basically, the woman had the facts wrong, although you can argue that maybe Kristi should be there, or maybe she, and that's part of the discussion I raised was should it be like it was in the old days when basically people that were elected governor transplanted their families to Pierre and took up residence in the governor's mansion.
Or D.C. back in the
or
day.
Or D.C.,
yeah.
same thing. Yeah. And I like both of those, but as I say in the piece, I also like manual royal typewriters too, so.
So I'm wondering, Kevin, if when Governor Noem was a Congresswoman Noem, one of the things she was criticized for in the press and around coffee shops was not being present for votes, and that was something that she had to overcome during the election for governor. Would she be present? And now people are saying, I don't think she's present. So is this part of her, you know, kind of overall reputation, fair or not, that is sort of staying with her, that it's just hard to shake loose from?
Yeah, both. I mean, she missed some votes in Congress, and I think most of the time, if you go back and look at congressional records, if you want to be picky, you can usually find some votes people probably should have been there for. And I can't believe on the congressional thing how they can fly out Monday, fly back Thursday or Friday, run around all weekend in airplanes, going to different places, and then do it all again. I can't believe that's good for your performance in Congress, but they do it all the time. And it's Herculean to me. I don't know how they pull it off. So they managed to manage their family here and they manage their job out there. And that's what she's doing now or trying to do. But overall, as I say in the piece, I don't think you can ever accuse Kristi Noem of not showing up for work. She may miss some votes you think she should make, but she's a pretty hard worker. Yeah. And so I guess
she gets up pretty early.
Gets up pretty early and makes it to a lot of places. I mean, she gets around a lot. And she shows up in the legislature, and she shows up out here and over there.
Where does Kennedy live? Because that maybe is the daughter that is in question, because Kennedy is the one who got a raise. And I personally have heard some things that, Kevin, I'm going to say are straight up sexist when people accuse Kennedy. And it's, I don't want to repeat the things that people have said, but I will say, you know, it's sexist when you're not talking about her qualifications or how much she gets paid. You're talking about what she looks like, what she wears, and what she might look like in a swimsuit. So let's just say that those are the things that I heard recently, which are just nasty and untrue and really misogynistic.
Yeah, that's sad.
So where does Kennedy live?
I don't know. I don't care. I mean, she's a single daughter with a job in Pier, and if she lives in the mansion, who cares? I mean, she's part of the family, but it's none of my business. Somebody asked me specifically if a son-in-law and a daughter are full-time residents there. I guess that's a family there, and maybe you have that discussion. I'm not sure. If a single child is living in her mother's residence, which is the governor's residence, who cares? Mm-hmm. And I don't know Kennedy very well. She seems like a smart young woman. Everything I've known about her from interviewing her and talking to her, she seems very nice. I was critical of the raise she got only because I don't think it looks politically appropriate. And it had nothing to do with her gender. It's just a kid of the governor working in the office got a raise that stands out. I imagine Kristi Noem gave her a raise because she thought she deserved it.
And because her duties changed and she was given increased duty. Now Tony Van Huysen is coming on board. Those duties continue to shift. So
that guy, he's back.
I do just feel like it's important every once in a while with our first female governor to point out when some of these, some of the things people say, people ought to reflect a little bit on why they're saying them and how they're saying them and if what they're saying today is different than what they would have said about Tony Van Huysen being the governor's son-in-law or about what Kennedy Noem is doing. Just take a moment to think about what you're saying and make sure that you're going at it for the right reasons is my advice.
That is very important. I had an extended conversation with a Noem staffer by phone this week who I don't know well. And I brought that up because I said I always have to back up a little and ask, is this criticism of Kristi Noem in any way based on gender? Mm-hmm. Because I think I've seen instances where it was. And I think you always have to be careful. She's a tough cookie, And would we say that about it if she was a guy? Would we notice that about her, that in a campaign she is, as she says, ready to play full contact politics? I don't know. I have to watch myself on that, and I hope other people do too.
Yeah. Once again, skepticism and fact-checking and just going back and saying, are we being fair? Are we being equitable? It's a good question to ask. I want to, quick, before we run out of time, and we only have about 2 minutes left, talk about this Senate Concurrent Resolution 603, because you're going to write about that next week. And I printed out the original version of this resolution and the resolution as it currently stands. Yeah. There is nothing the same about them except the number, really. Yeah. A couple words. What the heck happened here? At least Urban Jury reported on it, and you can find it on our website, sdpb.org. But explain to people how in the world we can go from one thing to another in a concurrent resolution so quickly.
Well, you can hoghouse stuff, and that's the term. And you can, if you got the votes, you can do just about anything in the legislature. And so we've got a resolution that talked about firearms-related deaths and firearms-related safety, and it was crafted very carefully. By Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America and Reynold Nessebaugh, the senator from down your way. And and to respect the Second Amendment, to outline some of the dangers of having guns in the home, and to promote the idea of gun safety and security to prevent maybe a quick decision, suicide, maybe an accidental shooting, and just, to me, common sense stuff as a gun owner.
And a resolution for June 5th to be Gun Safety Awareness Day.
Yeah.
Is where it started, yeah.
It started out, they were talking about Gun Violence Awareness Day, and or Firearms Violence, and that was too strong, so they changed it to Gun Safety Awareness Day, and then they changed it to Gun Safety Awareness, because they're trying to make it palatable in this NRA strong state, and it basically got rewritten to be a laudatory piece about gun safety courses and programs and teachers by the NRA and how much good they've done over the last 117 years.
Right.
Now, the end result is still
pending.
Comment that says gun safety and security is important, and I think that's good. But I think taking out all that other stuff, talking about the real threats of firearms in the home, which are legitimate, that's why I'm doing a better job of securing my guns, I think that was unfortunate.
So we're going to follow this. Sturbinger's been following it in the State House, and you're going to write about it on your blog, and we'll have a longer conversation about this next week, because the language is definitely different and worth exploring.
Yeah.
Kevin Wooster, thank you so much for being here with us. We appreciate your time.
Good to be here.